Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. In today's show, we have an old friend. Friend of the show has been on, I don't know, Greg, how many times? Three? Four? Something like that.
Yeah, a couple for sure. More
It's
than
Adam,
two.
more than two. It's Adam Lillian, the global business develop with UL. He's in the global the business development lighting. I'm going to get my talking going here. We're going to get going. After starting in cancer research, Adam has spent his early career in marketing and advertising, developing insights into why technologies are adopted by society or not. Today, Adam's focus is to understand where the lighting market is headed and to ensure that UL solutions build services to meet the needs of their customers. As UL subject matter expert in circadian effective lighting, Adam served on the industry task force investigating current circadian practices. In 2019, UL published UL Design Guideline 24480 promoting circadian entrainment with light. He has spoken at conferences, led webinars, published papers, and authored several circadian service patents for UL solutions. Those services are now launched. Adam entered the lighting industry after the 9/11 tragedy. He has been a lighting manufacturer, a lighting design consultant, and a commissioning agent for IoT controls. Studied at SUNY Buffalo for a BS in architecture and at Pratt Institute for an MS in communication design. He studied Renaissance design at Siena University in Italy. Before we get to our esteemed guest and friend of the show, like I said, he's a friend and we love him. And we'd love to talk to him, which is why it's taking so long here, Greg. I'm keeping everybody on their toes, but we got to get locked up here. We got to go to GripLockSystems.com, GripLockSystems.com, Greg Eric.
I've said it before, and I'm real this time. Now, for real, if you are going to hang a fixture, you better use GripLock. And I was on a site yesterday that we were putting high bays in, and they put in. We always supply GripLock with our stuff, first of all, just
Okay.
for full disclosure. And we sent a couple hundred of them for these fixtures they're hanging, and they had hung about 50 of them with chain. They looked horrible. They were crooked. They were offset. And I went in and I said, "What are you guys doing?" They said, "Well, the fixture came with a chain." I said, "Throw the chain out. You're using GripLock because there's no other choice. That's it. It looks like crap if you don't use it. So use GripLock
Especially if you're
all day."
doing square or rectangle fixtures. Oh man, you absolutely
Always.
have to have it. Get that level
Yep.
on there, put the little magnetic level on the top of the picture. Zip, 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 done. Pictures look great. Everything's straight and even and level. You're not leaning on the end of the fixture trying to stretch the chain so that it's now level with the other one, almost level. Get out of here. Go to GripLockSystems.com. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, NAILD.org, got tons of hot stuff going on in NILD, man. I'm telling you, it's getting crazy, Greg. Some of that stuff they're putting out, those guys are getting wild. It's going to be fun
That's right.
for the next couple of years. But for right now, we got a convention coming up in Dallas in September. Check it out. Adam, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. So I
Greg,
was going to
we're
ask
going
you,
down the circadian path again here. Let's do it.
I was going to say again, we've never talked about it, circadian, have we? Or maybe every other one lately, but what's different this time, Adam? Give it to us.
Well, before it was theoretical, and there was a lot of confusion in the market, and it's 2023. We're a few years behind, the whole industry is, but I think we're finally at an inflection point where the science is clear, where the services are now available, and we can move forward. But you guys
House.
are purposely, I would say, hard to convince. In the past, we've talked about does lighting really affect health? And I think we got through that, and we got through a few other conversations. But today, it's post-COVID. Health means a different thing to us, especially in the lighting in the building environment industry. And a lot of the confusion that was in the marketplace pre-COVID has since exited because we take health very, very seriously. Give you an example, before COVID at Light Fair, I don't know, maybe a third to two-thirds of all of the booths said our products are healthy. Today you go to Light Fair or Light and Build in Germany and very few are saying their product is healthy. And it's so I think we're getting more serious, and some of the science is now clear. And UL has launched a few services that that make it easy to ascertain how the space is doing, as well how to assess the score of a luminaire in terms of its non-visual impact, how it affects the light that enters our eye, and how that light is then converted into circadian stimulus, or circadian stimulation is a better way to say it, because circadian stimulus is one of the three published methods. We've done a few webinars that describe the difference between the different methods of ascertaining whether a space is circadian effective or not. There's the well building standard, which is based on equivalent melanopic lux, or EML. There's UL Design Guideline 24480, which is based on circadian stimulus, or CS. And there's also the European DEEN spec 67600, which is based on melanopic equivalent daylight illuminance, which is METI. And the services that we've launched provide all three of those measures for you, so you don't have to figure out which one's best anymore. You can just use our services, and at one moment say you want it in the WELL Building Standard, the next moment you want it in the German DEEN spec, the next moment you want it in UL Design Guideline 24480. And so you can actually compare and contrast how your space is doing and how your luminaire is doing. And lighting designers have never been able to understand exactly which luminaire they want to use for a healthy project. So having a score where you can compare one fixture to another is critical. And with that, we're issuing the first test results, and we're excited to say that we're off and running. What
So
questions do you
how
have?
have you, yeah, I guess, how did you actually prove that? You say it's working. How did you prove it? What steps? I know you said a number of things there, but what specifically did you do that said, all right, it's working?
So if you take a step back and you say, what's working about health and lighting, different from what's working about measuring a space or assessing a luminaire, there's been a lot of confusion that sounds like, oh, the math is fuzzy, or it's all about delivering blue light in the morning, or no, we have to take out blue light in the morning because the sun on the sun's on the horizon is 2300 Kelvin, but the closest we can get to in LED lighting is 2700 Kelvin. So it's about changing the color temperatures during the day, and that has an impact, but it's not the critical impact. What's critical is that the light that's delivered to our eyes sends a signal to the brain that allows the 24.2 hour rhythm, circadian rhythm of human beings, to match the 24-hour rhythm of the sun and the moon. And it's that entrainment, the synchronization is entrainment's a fancy word for a synchronization that's based on an external factor. That synchronization, when it's off, it means that 15 minutes a day or so, we're slipping. And over weeks and over months, it means not great sleep. Not great sleep means our immune system doesn't reset. And let's say that there is 100 people in a room, and let's say some percentage of that group has a propensity towards depression. Another group has a propensity towards diabetes. Another group has a propensity towards cancer. If your sleep is not resetting your immune system, then those illnesses that we have a propensity towards will start to exhibit themselves in greater numbers. So it's not that light prevents depression. It's not that light prevents diabetes. It's that light is a critical component to our immune system resetting every night, and that definitely impacts our health. And because we're able to now have conversations with lighting designers, with building owners, and describe to them why it's in their best interest, we're at a different stage of the science is fuzzy question. But let me stop there. I'll get to the more specifics about what's working in terms of a space or a luminaire. But what questions you have about this inflection point that I'm describing?
So, I just like to declare that I love being right. And I'm quite happy to say that you've confirmed once again, just for all the people that love me and hate me out there, I am right again. I said many years ago, and I think you re just reiterated right there, that any benefits that are to be derived from any kind of lighting system, including the sun or whatever people are talking about, that is trying to be mimicked inside, will simply help people sleep better and deeper. And that sleep will be what causes the other downstream health effects that are positive. And I also said that this will be an incremental thing and that, it's measured statistically as well, Adam, that, you're talking about if you could improve human health outcomes by 3%, it doesn't sound like a big number, but if you apply that across, all the different people within a space, it ends up having a massive impact down the road. So I like to be confirmed like that. But also, we've heard that this sleep piece, but you're talking about certifying products, correct?
Correct.
How?
Well, and in particular, not we use the word certify in a very particular way, but let's say we're measuring the performance of that product and we're reporting on it.
And the performance of that product as installed in a certain way and within a certain application at a certain amount, at a certain day, and you're providing all that information to the specifiers and designers and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
And how do you get past, are there any assumptions like that acronym you gave, MEDI, MEDI, okay? Melanopic equivalent something in the name.
Melanopic daylight equivalent illuminance, which is fortunately, there's a group in Europe that has worked very hard to publish a paper, and they define exactly what MEDI is. They discuss the calculation, and that's because it's published. It's available to those who might understand the math, as is the EML for the WELL Building Standard, as is the CS in UL Design Guideline 24480. So those are available. It might convince you to wait until somebody comes out with a service that makes it like point and clickable. And that's where we're at now. So that's how we bridge the gap between what's changed in the marketplace and what's changed with a simple luminaire. So, for example, let's say you're a lighting designer and you're trying to figure out what overall overhead lighting you're trying to use, you want to use in a project, and it's a healthy. Let's clarify that it's a healthy project. The building owner, the people leasing the space, want the space to deliver enough light to the eye to send the signal to the brain that it's daytime, so that we're synchronized. Our 24.2 hour cycle is synchronized with the 24 hour cycle. So if I'm looking at an overhead lighting, and one has a score of let's say A, another has a score of B, another has a score of C, and if I understand those scores, I can sit there and say, well, I'm really looking for this type of fixture. Let me narrow it down. And then let me look at those relative scores. And then, oh, even though I like the second one that's a little bit less effective than the first one, my project doesn't really like that design shape or that form factor. So I'm going to go with the second one. But then they understand that of the fixtures or luminaires that they're selecting something that has a higher capability of stimulating the circadian rhythm in the human brain, and therefore that's what's been missing. And that's and because it's a non-visual score, and by the way, a score that's higher than another score is better. And if it's twice as high, it's twice as effective. Theoretically, I need half as many fixtures. It doesn't quite work that way. You still have to do a CAD design. But if I'm guessing between 100 fixtures, which IES file to drop into my CAD drawing, I just avoid. If I'm a lighting designer, I'd say we're not ready yet. But now that we'll have scores for each of those fixtures, at least each of the fixtures that the manufacturer that comes to UL for this performance testing, and they report the number. Once that number is available to the marketplace, a lighting designer can select, oh, I want this product and not that product. And by the way, one of the things that we learned by going out and talking to the industry, including IALD, but including IES sessions, as well as LED education sessions and light and build sessions over in Germany, and light fair sessions in both New York and Las Vegas, for example, we're finding out that people love the idea of a score relative to the luminaire. It's never been conceived of before, and we're seeing quite an interest in this. And in just a few months, you'll have a number of luminaires that have these scores. And when a lighting designer selects a product for light and health, even if the project takes 18 months for the lighting to be installed, the chances of a last minute value engineering go out the door. Why? Because when value engineering came about, it comes about because I can buy fixture X for $25 cheaper than fixture Y. But when you have health and calculations that have been executed by a lighting designer, even if it was 18 months ago, you're not going to swap out that fixture at the last second because there's health implications. And the person who paid to have the lighting designer and is paying for that fixture is not interested in somebody saving $25 at the last second.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, and
Just a,
kind of
it's
what
just a
I'm
fact.
wondering. Yeah, what I'm wondering though is the design and having the capability to have a score is great, but who's asking for it, and why are they asking, and where does the demand come from?
That's a great question. So we looked at and so my background is in understanding the ecosystem, all of the different points that have to be touched. So to go to a lighting designer and say, "Hey, we can score a circadian luminaire," that's one part of the puzzle. If you don't also discover where the money is coming from and what the motivation for spending that money is, you've lost the picture. You also have to take into account that the lighting rep agency is the one that is often supplying the lighting designer with the data. And the lighting distributor has to be able to speak the language in order to make this whole system work. So when we looked at where the money was going to come from, here's what we discovered: that if there were ever a time when it was tough to lease space, and unfortunately, COVID has produced that time, if it's ever a concern for a building owner to increase the value of that space, and for a person looking to sign to a business looking to sign a lease, to have an advantage, a hiring advantage, healthy lighting is that perfect mix. So let's take a look at where the money comes from. So the building owner is the person that we expect is going to end up paying for the lighting, correct? But when in, for example, in Class A office space, the lighting, if there's an upgrade requested by the customer, it's typically accounted for in the tenant improvement budget. What's the tenant improvement budget? If I go to sign a lease for 10,000 square feet for 10 years, I start negotiating with the landlord, the owner of the building, that I want the cafeteria that the previous business had. I want it reduced in half. I want the bathrooms. Okay, the bathrooms are really expensive to move. I want to move these walls. I want to raise the ceiling in this space because that's where people are going to walk in And a 9 foot ceiling is not what our customers expect. We want 15 foot ceilings, so we want to pay for all of this, and that's called the tenant improvement budget. For a one for a 10,000 square foot space, that tenant improvement budget is often over $1 million. And that where did that come from? That's negotiated by the leaseholder, and it's built into the lease actually. So the monies for improved lighting, for healthy lighting that makes people more alert during the day, decreases their chances of depression, diabetes, and long-term rates of cancer, is something that's negotiated by the leaseholder with the building owner. And one of the things that the building that we discovered that the building owner is interested in is making improvements to the space that will improve that space going forward. So if I put in really expensive rugs, at the end of the lease, I'm replacing those rugs. They're being discarded because you have to have new rugs when you take a new lease. But lighting and healthy lighting is something that stays with the building. So the landlord is very excited to increase their space. What UL's
Possibly,
offering,
possibly. Let me hit you with a
it
couple.
depends.
Let me hit you
Go
with a
for it.
couple questions.
Absolutely.
Does your certification demand that manufacturers have replaceable components for these fixtures should they fail?
Well, understand that our performance testing is optional. It's and as well, even healthy lighting in a space is optional. There's
Sure,
no
of course,
vision that code will require it. So no, we're not putting any types of. So I think you're referring to the European singular fixture ability to replace the LEDs but keep the bent metal in place.
Yeah,
We have
I'm also I'm concerned.
no requirements on that.
I mean, like, so for example, you have a building owner does a leasehold improvement, right? And he the accountant factors in 25 years amortization on the light fixture and projects maintenance cost with fluorescent actuarial tables. Okay, so this is how much this system is going to cost over 25 years. Factors in some inflation or whatever. What we've seen with LED is that, you know, the industry should really be sending out bulletins saying, "Hello, bean counters of the world." You know, remember, you know how you used to amortize lighting systems and capital over 25 years and, you know, depreciate them over 25 years? Yeah, you need to change that to 10 and get ready to change out all your light fixtures every 5 to 10 years, because there's no replaceable parts for all these flat panels that are out there. And it's going to be cheaper for you just to replace the entire fixture than it is for you to repair the fixture. And so you should know that. My concern is that when we raise the price of the light fixtures, and you know, and we do not demand, the industry does not come up with some sort of standardization or cross manufacturer parts or supplies like it used to have in the old days. You remember the fluorescent days, every ballast was a ballast for no matter who made it. You put it in the fixture, it worked. And I'm worried about when we're selling these high-end lighting systems that, you know, even with the integrated controls, you know, once the fixtures fail between years 5 and 10, which is realistic, that's basically the life of LED light fixtures, two fluorescent tube lives. You know, how are we going to get them again to pay 5, 6, 7 times what a flat panel costs? And how are we going to be able to measure the ROI? Does it exceed that time frame? And then finally, our customers just can be pissed off that that their light fixtures need to be ripped out every 7 to 10 years. You know what I'm saying? It's a real concern, Adam.
Well, Michael, you bring up a great assumption that I want to challenge.
All right.
You refer to healthy lighting, for example, being more expensive or being an incremental cost. What's really exciting is that when we produce a score, we offer to produce that score for either a single CCT LED fixture or fluorescent fixture or halogen fixture. Of course, everyone's going to, everyone's moving to LED. And we're also offering to do this for white tunable. as well as for dim to warm, as well as for RGB, which should be a surprise, as well as the types of lighting that that have been used on submarine systems and in
Sure.
outer space. And it's only when you see the score of each luminaire can you make a decision. Does my project budget allow me to spend more money, or do I have to deliver the goal using a fixed CCT that has minimal time of day controls? So by applying a score, a circadian score to each luminaire, we're finally going to know, hey, if I we're going to know the answer to this question. Hey, I've got a lot of money in my project. I need something that's really cool. So I need something that changes during the day. What luminaire should I go with? Or somebody else comes along and says, wow, I've got a really fixed budget. My client is interested in delivering healthy space, but at the minimum cost, what is my other alternative? Right now, I don't think anyone in the world knows that if you pick fixture A versus fixture B versus fixture C, what is the increase of efficacy from a health perspective? Because it's non-visual.
But Greg, I know you want to jump in here, but I just want to say, like, the process you're describing is the spec and bid new construction model or major renovation model, right? So you think there's a designer and a budget, and we're going to do all this sort of stuff. I would say that, most light fixtures are not sold that way. Most of them are sold on paybacks, rebates, incentives into existing buildings without designers and without specifiers. Greg, go ahead.
And just to add, and Adam, you can reply to it all, but you're talking about healthy lighting, and I know you have a scoring system, but it sounds like Kelvin temperature doesn't matter because you'll rank a single color. Is it output? What is it that makes it actually healthy?
That's a good
I know
point.
that's a lot thrown at you, but I'm just trying to figure that out.
Well, actually, there's a slide that I can refer to, but I can't share it with you right now because of the way the system's working. But in the slide, it's a slide that shows the human. It's a cross section of the human brain, and it shows light coming into the eye. It shows the supranucleus and the pineal gland and the IPRGCs. It just refers to them as where they're located. But the elements of what comes into the eye can be described as timing, duration, spectrum, amount, and distribution. And all of those matter. But for each particular fixture, when an engineer at a lighting manufacturer is designing a light, since they'll be able to come to UL and score during research and development, score each fixture decision and see how it affects the circadian score, they'll be able to make more effective designs. To your point of what's most important, it depends on which standard you're using for your project. If you use the WELL building standard, which is based on EML, or the DEAN spec TS, technical specification 67600, which is METI, both of those have a higher score for 480 nanometer wavelength, and it falls off from there. CS is much more involved, and it's much more complex calculation, and it looks at the whole body system and the whole reaction of the body. And depending on which side of the fence you're on, you could say that spectrum is more important, or you could say that amount of light is more important. But because our report will generate, and I have another slide to show people, it shows on the left-hand side, it shows an image of the laboratory. On the right-hand side of the slide, it shows a cross-section, and it shows that we're taking a reading facing forward of the person, the standard observer, and we're placing a fixture over here. And the light is reflecting off the ceiling, off the walls, and off the floor, off the desktop, and it's hitting our eye. And that's how we're taking our measurement.
Do the
So the
fixtures have to be
so
mounted on the wall? Like, do they have to be mounted vertically?
no, they get mounted in their standard location, So a recessed troffer gets installed as a recessed troffer in the ceiling. A pendant hangs down, and the wall wash
But to
gets
get the
either if
healthy
it's.
effect, to get the healthy effect, like first of all, how do you know it works? Like that's what,
Which part?
okay, hang on. So the lighting industry, one of the reasons why we're skeptical is just because the lighting industry has always been filled with snake oil marketing claims, let's face it, for a long time. And I know that there are a lot of serious researchers in this space, but how do you know? I know Dr. Mariana Figueroa did some work on this, and Dr. Mark Ray, where they had provided some information to the public just free with a tool that they had. But other researchers have suggested that the lights need to be mounted vertically on the wall in order to get the amount of light you need going into the eye, and that ceiling mounted lights will make very little difference just simply because of the angle of attack. How do you know that, hey, this fixture is an A pluser, and if you do this layout, it's gonna, you're gonna get enough. People are different heights. People's have different types of eyes. Like, how do we know that it's gonna work? Because in our business
A great
model,
question.
we go out and we sell people this stuff, and we're not, there's going to be no specifier. It's just going to be Greg Garrick there swinging through the trees with a knife in his teeth, going, "Health effects, raw! $50,000 deal.
Get
Go for the
healthy.
A, baby. Go for the A." Right? How do we know? What can we describe as the outcome? How do we know it works?
Let's start with the simplest example, and let's take your scenario earlier where there's no redo of all the lighting, and let's say you're stuck with what you got, and let's say you have a 16 cell chrome parabolic lens, and let's say that it's 2.5 inches tall, and it was designed, I think, back in the 70s to ensure that there was no glare, so that when I'm seeing all these fixtures across the room, all the light is heading straight down. I might see just a little teeny bit of light bouncing off the parabolic lens, but the light is pretty much shooting straight down. So the distribution is might be shaped like this. And if I swap out that parabolic lens with a flat panel lens that is designed, let's say it's flat panel, but it's designed to bend the light down and inward, and the glare that I'm perceiving is not actually glare, it's actually light hitting the vertical plane of my eye. I can tell you right now which one is going to be more effective in delivering a healthy
Well, we know
outcome
that because that we know that
for the
because
occupant.
those parabolic louvres that they blasted in everywhere in the 80s and 90s to stop the CRT computer screen glare, that's what they were for, right? To stop the glare on those computer screens, actually contributed to seasonal affective disorder. They know that
Correct.
seeing dark walls all day caused people to become depressed. And so that we need this vertical illuminance. So I guess what you're saying is that if you change the lens, you increase it your rating within UL standard right away, right? That's a
That's
jump up in
correct.
the rating.
Now, and we are talking to manufacturers who do replacement lens strategy, who do retrofit kits, who do LED tube replacements, where we're offering to take the typical fixture that's being retrofitted, and test it and give it a score, and then test and give a score to the replacement strategy, whether it's a new lens, a new bulb, or a whole new kit. And then that manufacturer can put a label right onto their box that says, can increase healthy ratings of your space by up to X percent based on our lab results. And then they can go to they can click on the lab results that UL did, and they can read the test methodology and understand why they're able to make this claim. And your earlier point about snake oil, that happens in every industry, but that's one of the purposes of UL's existence. UL is a science-based organization that cuts zero corners, and we've been around for 127 years. We haven't cut corners yet. We're not going to for the next 127 years. So you can count on our testing.
But the question is, what are we testing for, right? So certifications, are we certifying the right things for the customer, so that a lot of times, when people see UL, CUL, CSA, ETL, Intertech, these different different accreditation labels, they know, the public knows that this is an electrically safe device. That's what they know. And then the electrical safety authority in the jurisdiction looks at it and says, okay, that's the right label on the right fixture, and now has it been connected properly? And so all of these accreditation agencies were traditionally created to prevent downstream catastrophes like fires and stuff like that, right? Now you're moving into a different area. You're not removing risk, you're adding benefit, right? So you're
Correct.
certifying additional benefits to customers. And I think it's easier to remove risk, like stop the tubes from flickering. That makes a healthy lighting system, right? No flicker means it means you're not doing damage, right? And so that's a healthier lighting system. So you certify for no flicker. You remove electrical hazards or whatever in your certification process. But now we see UL moving into this new space, which is to certify benefits on products. I'm nervous about that. I'm nervous about that with selling lighting. We've seen some problems with DLC in certifying lumens per watt as the major to the cost of other things. Are there any, and I know probably you're going to say no, but are there any unforeseen consequences of this? Like, for example, we're not a nocturnal species. So should shift workers be using these lights, or should they be dimming these lights, or how do we deal with night workers? Like, as a, would a circadian system entrain them wrong properly, possibly, if they were working the night shift or something like that? And that's just one possible downstream problem that I can envision right now. What do you think of that?
Let me take this as a two-part question. The first
Okay.
part, on the first part, UL has been doing performance testing for decades now. You might not be aware of it, but for example, when we do cybersecurity scores
Okay.
for hospitals and for nuclear plants, and then we created cybersecurity scores for consumer-based products. Those are all performance-based. There's no minimum threshold, and because the hackers are doing something different pretty much daily, there's no standards body equivalent. And for lighting, we've been doing UV scoring, which is not a requirement, but it's a score, so it's a performance score. So we've been in this space for quite some time. Your second part has to do with actually, could you let me ask you to restate your second question, which had to do
Nocturnal.
with the with nocturnal
Yeah,
and
we're
night
not a
shifts
nocturnal
in
species,
the
so you have people working at night. Is there possible
in the
negative outcomes? Yeah, from these types of
there
lights.
there there's not negative outcomes from these types of lights. There's negative outcomes from a daytime or diurnal species staying up all night and doing a second or third shift work. In fact, the three published standards that I've referred to, the WELL Building Standard, DEEN Spec 67600, and UL DG 24480, and in fact, the UL DG 24480, the long title of it is UL Design Guideline 24480, Promoting Circadian Entrainment with Light for Day Active People. And that's on purpose because there is not a known good way to deal with nighttime lighting, except that we should minimize disruption of the circadian pattern, because you cannot take a human being. And even in 10 years of working the night shift, they're still a diurnal species. They still want to be awake during the day, and they want to be asleep during the night. And that's determined by melatonin and cortisol levels, which there's a lot of research on out there that I would
I'll
advise
tell you, if
any of
there's
your.
one thing I've learned from Get a Grip on Lighting and Restoring Darkness, humans are not a nocturnal species, and everything about shift work and working late at night and working, after hours, as much as some people really seem to like it, Adam, some people love working the graveyard shift, as much as people say that it's really dangerous for your health to be a long-term shift night shift worker. Yeah. It's not healthy for you. Let me ask you this. Other times we've come across these health effects researchers, and sometimes I haven't read all their research papers, but I find that there's assumptions about the way the human eye receives light in the outdoors and then takes those assumptions, matches lux levels or matches different kinds of patterns, and then makes the assumption that the same thing will happen indoors if we just have the same amount of electric light. Did you guys shake that out of your studies, or has that been shaken out that, you know, the human eye reacts differently to electric light and it works differently outside, and there's like this, I don't know if the cones or whatever, the way that your eye extends and focuses back and forth while walking is part of the circadian entrainment, can only happen outside. That idea of looking far off into the distance and then looking right in front of you and then a little bit ahead of you and then far off into the distance, and that this rotating, changing cycle of your eyes while walking down the street is actually very important to the circadian entrainment process. And, you know, I think that's assumed that that will happen inside when it doesn't. Like, you can't look off into the horizon inside. It doesn't, your eye just won't react that way. Has that been taken into account?
It has in several different ways. If you look at the studies in California of several thousand classrooms, I think it was in the 1990s, and there was a study of the impact of windows. And mm-hmm. windows are what allows a student to look to my left and see a window and look beyond the pane of glass and look into infinity.
Sure.
And they determined that there was an increase in reading and math scores mm-hmm. with the ability to look out of windows. Interestingly, there was also a study, part of that study looked at light tunnels that come in through the ceiling that allow natural daylight into the classroom. And when you segregate out those rooms that have windows, and it's not typically usual for a room that has windows to use light tunnels, but sure. if you take a look at indoor spaces that don't have access to windows, that have light tunnels or don't have light tunnels, they also noticed that there was an increase in reading and math scores with the I'll call it, because remember 1990s, we were stuck with fluorescent lighting.
Sure.
It was at least the difference between a full spectrum light quality and a light that has a spectrum that looks like this.
So you're making my point for me, though, that there. So I believe that, and I probably talked to you about this before, and that's where I'm getting this from, but mm-hmm. the windows were the best, the sun tunnels were better, and then the no windows was the worst. It wasn't like the sun tunnels were equal to the windows. There was a higher math score in the windows than it was from the sun tunnels. Is that correct?
Well, they were studying different things. You could probably go back and do a regression
sure.
analysis on to determine, especially if reading and math scores across all three were put into the same grid, and there was enough numbers,
yeah.
you could likely determine the difference between the three.
So there's something different about natural daylight. That's what we know, right?
Well, natural daylight. There's something that is important. An important point to make here: when we're outdoors, the sun is described as 100,000 to 120,000 lumens. Hmm. When we're indoors, we're at like 350 to 500.
Sure,
so you have, you know, 100,000 and you have 350.
I had a guy come on the show that tell me to put, 5,000 lux vertically in offices. I thought the guy was crazy. Okay.
Interestingly, before the 1970s, before the energy crisis, IES was recommending the indoor minimum level was 1,000. And it's only since the 1970s, with a concern for energy, that we've taken it down to, 0.4 watts per square foot and 350. Mm. And so what we've discovered in the last 20 years is that 350 is not enough to provide that daytime signal of a bright day.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you never get that signal.
So you're saying that signal can be completely replicated by electric light.
I'm not saying it can be completely replicated, especially
Okay.
because as a scientist, there's a conversation about photo biomodulation. There's conversations about biophilic design, and there's also groups that are now offering infrared and UV in their fixtures or in their units to deliver that back to the body, because indoors we don't get those types of things. So I won't say that they're exactly equivalent. I can say that that we do know the minimum threshold, WELL Building Standard, DEEN Spec, and UL Design Guideline 24480 all specify the minimum threshold that will send the signal to the human brain that will allow our 24.2 hour circadian rhythm cycle to equal what is actually happening on Earth, and will and our sleep patterns will stop wandering as they have been.
And so
And that's what's critical.
this is like a significant incremental increase to aiding the circadian entrainment. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, let me put it this way. If the three of us were landscapers during the day, we would not
Sure.
be having this conversation.
Yeah, of course.
Because so if you're stuck inside of a building, and you care about health, then the luminaire is a critical element. It's like a tool that up until now has had no rating associated with it. The other component is how do we actually make it easy to test a space to say whether it is has achieved the goal. So the minimum threshold goal for CS, for example, is 0.3 CS, which is a pretty complicated equation. But by way of example, if you're designing for the elderly and the elderly have a greater diffusion in the lens, then the minimum design goal requirement is 0.4. But how do you know in a space if you've hit 0.3 or 0.4, or with the WELL Building Standard or with German DEEN
Sure.
Spec? UL's second service is that we're able to go into a building, and I can refer to the slide that says UL's new service, circadian field measurements. We go into a space, and we're using very sophisticated equipment, and we're able to walk through a 25,000 foot space in about, well, let's say an hour and 20 minutes, and then go back to our lab and post. And in post-processing, we create the floor plan, and we score each space in terms of its circadian goal. And the circadian goal is defined by the user in the moment. So you can collect the data once, and you can change the measurement goals time immemorial, and it still goes back to the original collection gathering. And green equals above goal. You don't have to worry about those spaces. Yellow is slightly below the goal, but you might be able to fix it by increasing the reflectivity of the ceiling or the floor, or you might be able to change the lens on the fixture and get a slightly higher score. Red indicates that there's a problem. You need to relook at your lighting design, and you might need to go out and buy new lighting fixtures. To your earlier point, what's interesting is that a desk lamp is the most effective way to deliver lumens to the eye. Why? Because 30 inches away.
Vertical, yeah.
And it's deliver and it can deliver right to the vertical. Now, if I happen to have, a halogen lamp that's pointed down at the desk, I'm getting some reflection. If I point it towards our circadian score model, it'll blow out the circadian score, but it'll also have too high a glare factor. So we're also taking the luminance score of that fixture and reporting it so that people don't game the system. So this combination of these two services, measuring the luminaire and providing a score to the lighting designer, offering a service to the building owner to go into their space and create a map, means that we also now have a badge, which is a third slide graphic. We have a badge that can go on the outer space of whatever space we've tested. If it's an office, it goes on the office window. If it's the whole building, it goes on the whole building window. And like you're used to the LEED badge on a building, you'll have the opportunity to have a badge on your building that gives the circadian score of your building, either from a WELL standpoint, or a DEEN spec standpoint, or a CS standpoint, UL Design Guideline 24480.
I've got
So it's
a
this whole
thought.
ecosystem that we're dealing with. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of hit me a while ago, and it just keeps coming to my mind is, I know everything's going LED, but to be healthy, does it have to be LED? That yeah,
No,
okay.
you can. As a matter of fact, I often say I can solve the problem with T12 fluorescent fixtures. I
Sure,
just need a
that's
heck of a
great.
lot of them.
Yeah, the other thing too is I bet you there are many existing buildings that already meet this standard.
Yes.
Yeah, I bet you like it's something
In
that,
fact,
that Greg had nailed. We probably should be able to teach in one of our programs is whether to is how to assess for this.
we're working with an architect right now. They're a small firm in the Midwest, and they have global projects. And we've already gone in and tested a space that they did not design with health in mind. They designed it for good lighting quality, and they know the difference. They know what happens when you allow sunlight to come into a space. They also know how you have to design the interior space differently than the window offices. And what we discovered was pretty interesting. So almost all of the spaces were circadian effective. However, when people walked over to their wall and hit the dimmer and overrode the
It's exactly
controls,
home. Exactly right. Yeah.
and then when they closed the blinds, and they made the office the equivalent of an interior conference room because the blinds are now closed. So what one comment that we've realized is that when we offer the circadian measurement service, we also have to offer education to the building occupants because, I if you want to, change the health of your indoor space, Michael, you might not care. Greg, you might care, but you should know what impacts it. You should know that if you close your
I got a
blinds.
guy that wears sunglasses in my office. Okay? What are you gonna do with the guy? I mean, I'll show him this. Like, I don't know what to tell the guy. This is the host of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, okay? And he's got sunglasses on in the office. He just, I can't take the light. The lights are so bright. And I'll tell you, man, this is why there's two com this is why, human-centric lighting controls, tunability, controllability, control it on your phone, and circadian are like Godzilla and King Kong. They're going to rip each other to shreds. They're going to destroy the whole town because as soon, I'll tell you this, as soon as you give someone a dimmer, the first thing they do is dim the lights. That's the first, oh, this is too bright. This is too bright for me. I'm telling you. And so like
I met with a.
you have a prescription versus control, personal control. Ooh, I think personal control has a huge advantage, Adam.
I can illustrate your point perfectly. So I was in San Diego at the Future Offices conference, and there was a gentleman giving a speech who happened to be the head of the programming group for a large gaming organization. So let's say he has thousands of programmers on his team.
Sure.
And I asked him a couple of questions. I said, what's the desired light in the surrounding space where your programmers are working? And he goes, oh, they want it to
Off.
be like off, like nighttime. They want to feel like they're it's 4 in the morning and they're working from home. And they don't even, they put their headset on, and they even put blinds around there so they don't see other people. And I said to them, so if we did education for these individuals and we gave them offices to the left that are dark, offices to the right that are well lit and deliver a circadian stimulus so that they'll know it's daytime, what percentage of your developers would go to the left and what percentage would go to the right? And he goes, that's a good question. He goes, initially, I would have guessed that 90% of them would all go to the darker space, but once they started to realize that they could improve their health and their greater alertness, and they could potentially write more code and maybe even get paid more money, a lot more would go to the right. And he goes, but what's critical that you're bringing up is that they have a choice, which right now they don't have a choice.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, Godzilla and King Kong, they're going to fight it out, Greg Eric. I'm telling you.
There you go.
But you know, we got to lock it up here. We got to lock it up. We got to lock it up with griplocksystems.com, Greg Eric.
That's right. Hey, get a grip lock. That's right. Get a grip lock. Where it stops, it locks. And that's what they say. The key component is a gripper, unique self-locking, easy to adjust, toolless, and get rid of the chains. That's not even allowed anymore. I'm not allowing it. Neither should you.
Get a grip on grip lock. I love it, Greg Eric. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Come on, folks. If you have light bulbs in a warehouse, you got to join us. NAALD.org. Come down to our convention in September. And of course, Adam Lillian, always a pleasure to have him on the show, and always a bringer of knowledge and light to the lighting industry. And so it's exciting times right now. And we're going to see who's going to win, whether it's going to be King Kong or Godzilla. Thanks for listening.